Yes, I had the privilege of going to the Associated Christian Schools retreat this week from Wednesday to Friday down south. And there were a few things said that, while most of them were practical things, because it was a retreat for schools, it wasn't a church leaders retreat, it was for schools. I was actually impacted myself by some of these practical things, and I thought I'd just share a couple of them with you because they might change the way you think. The guest speaker, or the main guest speaker, there's many speakers, the main guest speaker was a lady called Sri Harda from the United States of America. She lives in Washington, and she actually served for President Bush, the first one, in the White House, served for the First Lady Laura Bush, and for many senators since then, in the area of policy, writing policy. She's very articulate and places a lot of emphasis on the humanities, art, reading, philosophy, and was trying to, convey that love of those subjects to us as well as part of schools going forward. And she spoke on a range of different ideas. Reading, had a whole session on why we should read fiction. It's interesting. I'm not going to talk about that today. Just talked about community and networks and how that changes your culture. Spoke about people like William Wilberforce, even though the movie was really only him and his friend, the Prime Minister, in reality, as she unpacked that, it was actually a community of artists and potters and publishers, a whole lot of people together who went forward to change that community. Things such as the potters came up with the design of a plate that said, "What is the worth of a man?" written across it, and of a picture of a man in chains written on it. And that plate ended up getting sold all through the United Kingdom as part of the cultural turn to abolish slavery. So it wasn't just Wilberforce in Parliament, but a cultural shift through a network of people. And she challenged us to get in networks of people, and not just with people who agree with us and who are yes men, but people who challenge our very ideas so you can sort it out and then move forward. She'd talk about iron sharpening iron in the Proverbs. There's two things I want to talk to you about from two of her sessions. The first one, her first session straight up, was why a Christian education is better. And I thought that was important for us to hear because most of us have children in Christian schools. And she said Christian education is not just on par with normal education, but it is better than a normal secular education. And she gave a few reasons for this, and I'll take a few. One, only a Christian education addresses the young person as made in the image of God. So it addresses a child as a spiritual being, and therefore the education is not just material or emotional, but the education is also a spiritual one. It acknowledges that spiritual knowledge exists, not just knowledge that can be tested in a lab. But there's things like love and evil, things that can't be tested. It's the fact that we learn that as teachers that we are training and teaching immortals. These children will not actually die. They'll die in this life, but each one of those children is an immortal. And they'll either, there's heaven or hell. Each one is immortal. They'll live forever. And if we believe that every child is stamped with the image of God, that changes the way we teach them. It changes the way we view them. Suddenly it brings in the concept of redemption. That every child, no matter how they learn or how far down the track they look of a bad child, there's redemption. For every child, no matter what grades, how they're learning, there's redemption. They're made in the image of God. That's what a Christian education does, a completely different viewpoint to a secular one. Christian education acknowledges that your spiritual nature needs to be fulfilled, the need to worship. A few years ago in a magazine called The New Scientist, a secular magazine, they wrote an article called Born Believers, and it said, "It seems our minds are finely tuned to believe in God from birth." Recognized, they wrote it from a secular viewpoint, but they recognized the fact that people will naturally turn to religion as a default point. So what if there is no king, as in our culture today? A lot of people don't believe there is a king, and you can see it. People turn to athletes, to celebrities, to sports stars to fill that void of worship, and that's evident to all of us. We see that. Students will choose somebody. They will. A Christian education helps the parents, the teach, the truth about Christ. A Christian education is a complete education. It's a holistic one. It looks at all views. And lastly, the reason a Christian education is better is it teaches a different view of vocation. It's just not enough to have a job that pays bills so that you can save enough money to go on holidays or to retire. There has to be something more. And a normal school will not teach that. They can't. They don't have that viewpoint. A Christian education teaches that a vocation should be a call. And by that very nature, if you have a call to a certain job, doesn't necessarily have to be full-time ministry, but if you have a call to a job, by inference, there has to be a caller. And we see this in, you know, all through the Bible, you know, with Samuel. Whenever there's a call, there's a caller. Which means that each calling, each vocation is a relationship. It's not just a job, it's a relationship. And we as individuals find our identity in that relationship. Completely different viewpoint than you'll get from any other school. A Christian education is better. It's holistic, it's complete, and it'll teach the child the spiritual truths that it needs. Secondly, another subject then she spoke about later on in the week was three great challenges to schools. But in essence, it's three great challenges to any part of society. And the three great challenges were distraction, dislocation, and disorientation. And I will leave the last two, dislocation and disorientation, but I just wanted to today talk about distraction. We are the most distracted society to ever live. The average teen sends 3,339 texts per month. I've spoken on TV here before, but we know that the average in the US TV viewing is 5 hours a day. In Australia, it's a bit under four every day. And that doesn't include internet surfing time. The average reading time for a teenager in our current life right now is 7 minutes a day. And that is, when interviewed, most of them confess that they are doing social media at the same time. So they'd have a phone checking their Facebook at the same time as theoretically reading. Only about 40 minutes a day is spent in face-to-face friendship right now. So, if we're a distracted society, if that's come in, what are we losing? And I'll give you a few points here, what we're losing because of our society. Number one, we're losing sleep. Average sleep times are dropping year by year. Because when we're on Facebook till midnight or 1 o'clock, we're not sleeping. You could talk to people about the health benefits of sleep. We're losing sleep. Number two, we're losing margin. Margin is when you leave little bits in your life so that you're not always running, you know, not everything is back to, but, you know, end on end on end. If you leave margin in your life, that's health enhancing. More importantly, if you leave margin, it permits service to others. She told us of a university in America who did a test. They called it the Good Samaritan test, where they just put an actor out in the middle of the walkway. Who needed help? And when the people walked by who didn't help, they just caught them on the other side and said, why couldn't you help this person? They said, oh, we're running late. The main reason they gave for not helping someone was they were running late. A distracted world takes away our margin. And when we have margin, it enhances our availability to serve God. You know, we talk often about discipline. You know, for me, discipline is creating some space in your life which allows God to act. To me, discipline is preventing your life to be so filled that you have no time for anything else. And we need to be a people who get back to discipline. Make room for God. Because if we don't make room for God, it'll be like that Good Samaritan. We won't have time to help him because we have no time. Another thing that being a distracted society does is take away your memory. Attention is the key to forming strong memories. And information overload hurts memories. So just for a simple illustration, it's like a cup sitting under a tap with the water pouring in at full throttle. You know, not much is staying in that cup. It's just constantly overflowing. Vocabulary. We're losing our vocabulary. You know, they say that you can't do philosophy by smoke signal. And you can't talk philosophy by text messages or Twitter either. Your medium or the way you choose to communicate will dictate what words you use, the length of those words, and then it'll lead on to your actual thought process. You start thinking shorter and less deep. So we're losing our vocabulary and then also the ongoing thought processes. We're losing empathy, imagination, and connection. Social media is displacing real rapport and conversation. And we're a generation that has information but no context. It's like butter without bread. And we have craving but no longing. And finally, the speaker, Cherie, suggested that we're losing our freedom. And she spoke about two authors, both who lived in the early 1900s. One called Orwell and one called Huxley. And they both wrote a book, different books. Orwell wrote a book called 1984, which predicted the future in 1984. He wrote this book in the late 40s. And he suggested by 1984, the world would be so locked up, like no freedom of information, that there'd be people would lose their thoughts. No permission to do anything. Huxley wrote A Brave New World, which suggested the opposite way. There'd be an influx of information. And there was a book written just a few years ago, in 1985, written Amusing Ourselves to Death. And he analysed these two books and then the effect that television would have on our world. But when you read the quote from this book, we realise that it's more impacting now, you know, all these years later, to what actually... Television has had a great damage on our world, but what really has had a great damage is actually the internet. It's gone far past television. And this is what Neil Postman wrote in Amusing Ourselves to Death. What Orwell feared were those who would ban books. What Huxley feared was that there would be no reason to ban a book, for there'd be no one who wanted to read one. Orwell feared those who would deprive us of information. Huxley feared those who would give us so much that we would be reduced to passivity and egoism. Orwell feared that the truth would become concealed from us. Huxley feared the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. Orwell feared that we would become a captive culture. Huxley feared we would become a trivial culture. Orwell feared that what we hate will ruin us. Huxley feared that what we love will ruin us. And when I heard her talk about that, I realised a lot of us, you know, that does apply to a lot of us. And I remembered last year, or earlier this year, Dad's sermons on the Sabbath rest. And I realised that we were people who trivialised that day of rest that God had instituted for us. The discipline to create space, you know, the need to read, the need to read the Bible spiritually, like, properly, where you mull over it and digest. And my thoughts, my challenges to you today is maybe grab those CDs again and you know, take it seriously, that need for a Sabbath rest. For me personally, I'd gone a little bit that way with electronics, but now I've decided that just turn off the electronics on Sunday completely. And I'll need my phone because I don't have a home phone, but other than that, you can get an app that just blacklists it all. You can't get in. And it'll be everything gone, Facebook, podcasts, everything on a Sunday, you know, and start creating the room for God so we become available.